Welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for joining us on the program this week. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski, and we'd like to have your questions on the show today. You can call those in to 765-496-1999. You can send emails to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good to see you.
Hey,
Happy
Stan.
New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Stan.
Let's get right to a listener question that's come in. Lou has written in with this. He says, more cities, large and small, are recently reporting incidents of extortion by way of ransomware, and I'm wondering how Mayor Tony and the other mayors view this threat and what efforts have been taken or are being implemented to protect our systems and our taxpayer funds.
Well, that's a very good question and something that's very serious, and you do see more and more of that throughout the country and the world than we've ever had. And so the city of Lafayette, about 3 to 4 years ago, began implementing new procedures, bought new servers, worked on new firewall, new software for protection. And we have really, over the last 3 to 5 years, upgraded to almost a quadruple layer of protection within our servers, within our software, within the procedures that we have, and the way that we back up information. And we actually have without disclosing the location, we actually have a catastrophic site location where if something would happen to City Hall or City Hall computer systems, we actually have a secondary site that we don't disclose where we have a secondary system set up. And so we've actually went to great lengths to try to make sure that we're prepared. And then the other thing that we do, and I know it's been a big change for our city employees, but we work with a company now where we put out massive amounts of training on, phishing and how people trick you through emails and what to look for and all the different types of ways that people get into your system. And so we put out training on a regular basis, and you have to pass that training and score at a certain level. And if you don't, you have to take it again. And then we have remediation training to the point that if an employee fails to pass it, they lose their email access. And if losing their email access means they can't do their job, they can lose their job. So that's how serious we're taking with our training to try to make sure. So we're doing everything we can on the firewall side. And trust me, people try to hack us every single day at the city of Lafayette. You can see on our system people trying to get into our financial accounts. I mean, so we do take it very, very seriously, and we spend a significant amount of time on the technology end of it, trying to protect us, and on the human end, trying to train our people not to aid somebody in getting into our system.
Is that something where, in your time as mayor, which is approaching two decades now, is that something where the city has had to invest more time, more money, had maybe seen some significant change in the way that the security of the city is done? Is that something that you've kind of overseen or noticed in your time?
Oh, yes. I mean, like I said, in the last 5 years in particular, and even before that, the way that we, do our servers, the way that we back up our information, the way that we protect our information, even down to, we have people that can remote into the system virtually, and the requirements that we have for NAT, the approvals now. And then, we have vendors that need to get into our system sometime. And so if there's vendors that do that, we require a multi-million-dollar insurance policy that they have to provide to us, that if our system gets hacked or malware or came through their process into our system, that they have that insurance. So, yeah, we do things tremendously different than we did 5 to 6 years ago.
Thanks, Lou, for your question. If you'd like to get a question to Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski today, call 765-496-1999. Go online and send an email to ask@wbaa.org. No malicious attachments, please. Or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. There was another recent incident of someone dropping off flyers in Lafayette promoting the KKK. This has happened a couple couple of times before. And there are, of course, a couple of ways to think about addressing hate speech like this. We've talked to Mitch Daniels on our programs with him, and he says, look, I don't want to spend any more time on this than I have to. I don't want to give these people any more of a platform than they might get otherwise. And he feels that's a good way to stop this from happening. But, of course, there's what some residents have said in recent days, which is they would like a huge public show of condemnation from you or others. How do you come down on how to address these things? I mean, you've been quoted as saying, look, they have some free speech rights, but then, you know, there's the city's kind of public stance. So how do you balance those things?
I mean, I think kind of just like you said, I mean, certainly we in no way support that type of activity. We, you know, as a community, we think the actions of the Ku Klux Klan are deplorable. We've said that. I don't know how loudly you can say that or if screaming that from the mountaintops changes the mindset of a handful, what I think is a very small group of people in the community, or somebody that under the guise of darkness sneaks down a street and drops off some, you know, flyers. I mean, I don't know, you know, if what we say changes the mindset of that person. So I think we do have to condemn it, but I think we have to continue to do as a community. And again, you know, some people say a stronger response from government. Well, government itself will never change racism, right? It'll have to be organically from the community. We need to keep doing things like the diversity roundtable. We need to do the things that show that we are an open, welcoming community with the different events we have, the working with Pride and the Outfest and types of things. But that has to come from the whole community, from the ground up. And, you know, I think everybody knows that myself and Mayor Dennis and the county commissioners have been over and over at events and activities showing that where we stand on these types of things. But it takes the whole community and everybody getting involved and helping, you know, to send that message that this is not a place where that is welcome. Now, again, even if every person did that, I don't know that there are people out there, you are simply not going to change their mind. For whatever reason, it is ingrained in them that somehow that is okay. And sometimes a life-changing incident, we've seen that where people involved with the Aryan Nation or white supremacy groups have all of a sudden had a change of heart. But it takes something dramatically, and it's almost always a one-on-one connection somehow that changes a person's mind. So we just have to keep working on in a community. I do agree with President Daniels to some respect there, that I think some of those folks just like a platform, that, you know, they pass those out. We never hear of an actual meeting taking place or a recruitment event ever taking place. Maybe it does in a basement somewhere and we don't know it. They can't pass it out. They get some publicity. We don't hear from them for a few months, and in the guise of the night, they sneak down the street and drop some off again. So, I mean, that's...
What sort of investigative resources would you ever have your police force, for instance, devote to finding out who these people are who are dropping these off, or monitoring whether there is a meeting in a basement somewhere,
I mean,
as you say?
We look at the cameras, and we got a kind of shadowy picture last time of somebody that we thought it might be. So we look at the cameras to see if we could identify somebody. Even if we do, I mean, therein lies our quandary. You know, do you go up and confront somebody about doing something, except for maybe the littering aspect, that's actually not illegal, that's protected free speech? Do you open yourself up for a lawsuit? Hey, you're harassing me. I didn't break the law, and you're harassing me. Why? So, you know, and I've lived through this. I mean, you know, I was on the police department in charge of the SWAT team back in the 90s when there was a Ku Klux Klan rally here in Lafayette. I also, because they asked for assistance, I helped at a Ku Klux Klan rally provide security in Kokomo, Marion, LaPorte. It's the ones that come to my head off. It's been a while, but, you know. So I've lived through these Klan rallies. I've been there providing security.
Are police ever in a position to turn down those requests?
well, they come through the local government, but, you know, at the no, I mean, it was at the, on the steps of the courthouse, right? So, and the commissioners have tried to do some things to make that a little bit challenging. Of course, that then that involves the nativity and everything, too. And so, you know, under the free speech of the Constitution, you know, that becomes challenging. But that's part of the point, I guess, I'm trying to make, too. Back then, there really were things happening, and it was outward, and it was overt, and they were having rallies. I know people are upset, as they should be upset, and we should continue everything we do. But actually, the activity is actually much less now than it was during different parts of our history, which is good. That's the way you want it to move and you want it to be. And so we'll continue to do what we can, but we have to act within the confines of the Constitution and Supreme Court, you know, law on things.
We had one caller who, I think a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but maybe a little not, suggested that if the KKK wanted to have a rally or a parade, as you point out, they have in the past, the city, he said, should sponsor a pizza party on the other side of town so that people would be lured away from wherever this thing was happening as a way for the city to show antipathy toward what's going on, but also a demonstration of some sort of unity that's away from this. And I thought,
Well, that's exactly what happened back in the 90s during the Klan rally that was here. People did hold other unity events throughout the county. And we strongly encourage people not to come down even to, you know, voice against it. You know, that was what we did. We said, hey, have a gathering. And people did have other gatherings to show unity. Don't give them the press and the coverage and the giant crowd that they want. Do stuff off-site. We actually did encourage that, and people did that 20. So it's not so much tongue-in-cheek. That's actually part of what the plan was. I don't know. Has that been 30 years ago, 20, 30 years?
It's been a while.
I've lost track of time a little bit. So we did do those things and encouraged off-site activity so people didn't show up and they didn't get the crowd they were hoping for.
I live not far from Loeb Stadium, to move on to another topic. It seems like there has been a fair amount of work done, it seems to me, faster than perhaps we thought it would get done, in part because we've had a fairly mild winter. Is that the case?
Yeah, I'm always hesitant to say too much because, you know, the next month, 5 below 0 every
sure.
day.
20 inches of snow in a day. Yeah, right.
But you're exactly right. The weather has been conducive to allowing them to continue to work, and it was really warm early on, so they got a lot of the concrete foundation work and a lot of the pylons in the ground. As you've seen, a lot of the excavation was able to get complete, and we were able to get all the dirt moved the way that we wanted to. And so they have been able to got to the point where then they could set steel and keep that piece moving. So we are certainly pleased with that. And we hope that the mild winter continues to keep us right on schedule, or maybe even a little ahead of schedule now. So if things go bad a little bit later with weather or rain in the spring or something, we'll be in good shape. But yes, right now we're making very good progress.
As my family and I were driving by the other day, my wife pointed out the fact that the one of the newest water slides of the Columbian Park pool complex is right beyond what will be the left field wall.
And
she's like, are people going to get hit by home run balls as they're coming down the slide?
Yeah, we've got that measured, and there's a little bit more gap than you think. It would take a big ball to get over to the slide or get the height of the slide or something. I mean, not at the bottom, but...
And there's another fence that's
between there. And we've thought about that. And, yeah. And if for some reason that turns into an issue, we'll put up a net. I mean, we'll run a net down the side there up so many feet, and we'll just run a net. But right now, unless we get a big slugger, we're probably okay. But to be honest with you, and you've been up there, you've seen it, foul balls right now, the way the field was flipped, foul balls did... Yep. Land over there by the slide.
It's true.
So we'll have a lot less than we had.
So one of the ways that municipalities often try to defray the cost of these big stadium projects is by offering up the naming rights for a cost to a company or a person. I don't think we've talked much about this. We always just assumed we were going to call it the new Loeb Stadium. Have you been in the thought process of, can we get somebody to buy the naming rights and thus offset the cost a little bit?
Yeah, we talked about that quite some time ago. And as a city, a park board, and a foundation board, you know, everybody was involved. You know, we've reached the conclusion. I think most people in the community would agree with us that we would sell the naming rights to the stadium to the right person, to the right entity. The Loeb family meant a lot to this community, and they meant a lot to Purdue. There's a lot of things here at Purdue. And we had made a decision that we would not just change the name of the stadium to call it Budweiser Stadium or something that we didn't feel carried the same commitment to the community and the same history and tradition to the community than the Loeb family did. We weren't going to sell out the name just for money for something that we don't feel represents the community in the appropriate way. So if the right opportunity came, I think everybody's in agreement that we would consider that. Naming the field, we're going to be a little bit more lenient on if there's people that want to name the field, and we're working on what that might look like and how that might be set up at the appropriate time. And I think as the stadium gets more and more done and people can see it and see how it's really going to look, I think there'll be some interest in working with some groups. But we feel pretty strongly not to change the name of the stadium just because of money and have the name of stadium that doesn't really represent the values and the history of our community.
But parts of the stadium, it sounds like if somebody wanted to, you know, put naming rights on a section of seating or on a concourse.
There's going to be all kinds of opportunities like that, yes.
Okay. I wanted to get your reaction to a couple of comments that were made in a recent Journal and Courier article about people making their predictions for 2020, things they'd like to see or things they hope for. One person writes, "I'd like to see law enforcement and our mayor do more about cleaning up the crime in Lafayette, especially with the events that have happened over the last few days." There have been a few shootings and things like that. This person says, "I believe crime is getting out of control and something needs to be done." So let me ask you this. You know, we sometimes get comments like this, too, and we've talked about crime as it's ebbed and flowed over the course of the time that you've been on this program. And certainly violent crime has gone down, generally speaking, in recent years. You've said also that you'd like to do more, that you think there's more ways to go. What do you make of this comment, though, from just a random citizen, someone, you know, writing into the newspaper and saying that this is what they feel?
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I want to be, and I've got quite a bit to say, but I want to be polite as responsible as I can. But I've said it on this program before. If that citizen thinks that somehow government and the police department by themselves is going to change humanity and change society by themselves, that's not going to happen. Everybody in the community has to play a role in helping to reduce crime. And I've talked about it before from, I think, in my mind, the way that we fund pre-K education and education, the way as a country we look at mental health issues and the way that mental health gets funded, the way that we look at drugs and drug addictions. And, you know, as a country, we're making progress now on the opioid crisis, but it took a long time to get into it, and it'll take a while to get out. But people are switching to meth, back to meth again, and things like that. So how do we look at long-term drug things? How do we keep families together? How do we make sure our kids have mentors? How do we make sure that Big Brothers and Big Sisters doesn't have a waiting list? How do we make sure that people in Read to Succeed are in every school? All of those things have to play a factor. We, you know, as a police department, in 2015, we announced our initiatives. And since 2015, when you look at Part 1 crimes, and I got the draft of the Part 1 crimes this morning, the big ones that we have to report to the FBI, from 2015 till now, they're down almost 1,100 crimes a year. And that's a significant amount. They're down a significant amount. Now, certain crimes are up, and we all know that the prevalence of firearms throughout the country is up, and that we're no different here. When you look at the number of shots fired calls that we have, than the ones that actually truly end up being where somebody shot at somebody or something. Those calls are up. And it appears that as a society, we've decided that reaching for a gun and violence is our first answer to a problem. We as a society, you cannot hire enough police officers to change that mindset or to be on every street corner. So it has to be a combined community effort from our faith-based partners, our business partners, our education partners. Everybody plays a role. And if somebody says their answer, well, what's the police and the mayor doing? Well, we're hiring new policemen. We've actually reduced the number of crimes. We've done a take-home car program. We've done the things that we can do within the law enforcement piece, and we're going to continue to do it. We've passed.
Of course, there's the new public safety tax.
Right. We're going to hire the two new detectives that we talked about and the other things that we all talked about. But it still is a community issue, and what do we do as a state and a nation? Because people come from all over. It has to be a large discussion. And I just encourage people, get involved with the YMCA, the YWCA, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, the North End Community Center, Mentor a Child. Do all of those things that try to keep people off that path. You know, that shooting that took place, it was actually in the county where that young boy shot that older gentleman, and it appears to be over some type of relationship with some lady. You could have 500 policemen, and that's going to still, I mean, you're not going to be able to stop. That's a personal human issue, and so we have to dig
in. And that's one of those things that I actually try to tell people when they talk to me about crime and they say, hey, will you, what are you hearing? What are you reporting on? And I try to impress upon them the fact that so much of crime has to do with people who know one another. It's not random very often.
When you look at the shootings, we think that most of those are back and forth between about 5% of the people. It's a very small number. You're exactly right. When you start, and that's part of what the new detectives are going to hone in on, those types of cases and building evidence to build those relationships that help us figure out, you know, how to solve more of those or maybe stop some of them. And we did, in the last 6 weeks, hire the second criminal analyst. And the ARC is totally up and running that we've talked about, our resource center, and they're turning out information on a daily basis now for policemen and things to look at. So, you know, we're going to continue to do more, but from the law enforcement side, we're doing what we should be doing, and we need to have the community continue to help.
So this seems like sort of a classic case of perception versus reality. And I know there are people out there who will say, look, perception is reality in some respects, because if people are saying to you, Mr. Mayor, I feel worried about the crime, then eventually that narrative stands a chance of getting out to people who are thinking about locating here to live, people who are thinking about potentially investing with their businesses in the community. How do you combat that possible perception getting out about Lafayette?
Yeah, I mean, that can be challenging, but we try to do it through our community outreach. We try to do it through programs like this, and hopefully with other media outlets that we get a fair. You know, I'm not sitting here saying no crime is up or there wasn't more shots fired than there has been in the past. We're not saying that, but we're saying when you look at it collectively and you look at, as you said, who are involved, how many of these are drug deals or how many of these are other things like that where the people know the people, it's still a very safe place to be. That is accurate, but you do have to fight that. And sometimes I have to remind people, too, even when you listen to the news or you look in the newspaper, and I understand they have a wide range, but you know, you can pick up the paper someday and you can see crime in Indianapolis, a crime in Richmond, a crime that happened in Muncie, a crime that happened in Gary, different ones. Everything you see in the media also did not happen here inside the city limits of Lafayette. And people get inundated with a lot of information. And sometimes it's hard to keep all of that separate, too, I think.
I wanted to ask you about another decidedly lighter comment that was made in that same article. Someone says, Lafayette should try to entice a big-name musical band or artist to come to town and play. Once booked, they should publicize it regionally so people come from far away. A large venue for the act should be selected and everything worked out in advance. Now, I've lived here about 6 years, obviously you far longer than that. And I've been trying to talk to people who have, you know, lived here a lot longer than I have about this question. And one thing I hear is that it seems to me that this person's onto something, that it's slightly less common than it used to be, that there used to be, for instance, bigger name bands that came and played upstairs above us here in Elliott Hall, which of course has 6,000 seats. You can have any size concert you want. Do you feel that way? Do you feel that, for instance, with the city getting back into booking the Lafayette Theater, which you'd recently purchased, that this is something you would actually like to put some time into?
Yeah, I mean, we are, but I will explain the challenge, and I think partly of what changed. Part of it is the way you can book things and the contracts, the way they are. So people that play in Indianapolis, you can't snag them as easy as you think as they come through Lafayette, because sometimes they have to sign contracts that say they won't play within a 90-mile radius within 3 months of playing at this venue. So some of those bigger name acts that you might be able to snag for a less price, it's a challenge to do, to be able to afford it. So I'll give you a quick example. We had Bret Michaels come to the Long Center, and we sold about 800 and some tickets for that, and we promoted it. That about sold the Long Center out. The city helped pay for that, to bring that here. So we could have somebody that was more well-known. Now, I know he's not as well-known as somebody right now, but I will tell you, between his fee and the production fee, that event cost $100,000 to put on. Well, we can't anywhere near charge those kind of ticket prices nobody will come. So the city helped pay for that so we could do something like that. So I think that is our biggest challenge. And that guy's from the 90s, and his fee was $50,000 plus then the production cost. Those other people are charging $200,000-$300,000. I mean, you can't make the numbers work anymore because of the cost. That's part of the challenge that we face, but we're working on it. But a lot of people were really excited that Bret Michaels was there, and they said that was cool that they didn't have to go to Indianapolis to see something like that. We got tons of positive feedback from the community on bringing him, but it's an expensive endeavor.
One or two other things in our last couple of minutes. The Trump administration has rolled back some federal protections on streams and wetlands, those protections enacted during the Obama administration. As the mayor of an area that, of course, relies heavily on a river and has lots of tributaries, do you think that something like this affects Greater Lafayette with some usefulness?
That may be a little bit early to tell, but I will just tell you my personal opinion. You know, we take great strides around here to protect our tributaries and our water, and we're spending millions of dollars not to dump things into the Wabash River. Water is the next oil, and we all need to be doing everything we can to protect our water supply, to protect our underground aquifers, to protect our streams and our rivers. We in no way should be going backwards in ensuring that we are protecting them. They are very important to our long-term health and stability.
All right, Mr. Mayor, the show went quickly today. Thanks, as always, for your time. We'll do it again next month.
Thank you, Stan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes, and find all of these shows archived at the Ask the Mayor page at WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.